Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Today in Alternative Medicine. I'm your host, MD Shahid, and I'll be with you this evening discussing various topics in the area and field of healthcare and health management. Show's coming live, broadcasting live out of Houston, Texas, on a very warm Thursday evening. Now, this may be your first time tuning in to Today in Alternative Medicine. And if it is, I'd like to let you know now that this show is a media effort that is dedicated to bring new and exciting scientific developments on the use of natural science for the control and management of common human concerns. That's what the intention of this show is about. And, you know, we're bringing this information. We're trying to get this information to individuals who may not be in the medicinal area, the medical area, just the common person. I wouldn't say the common, but the lay person who really doesn't know science, biology. And our goal is to bring this information to you. That's what we intend to do on this show. We'll be talking about various topics from time to time. I'd like to let you know now that this show is a project of Excel Nutraceuticals. At Excel Nutraceuticals, we produce and manufacture all natural-based products for the control and management of eczema, psoriasis, contact dermatitis, and thinning hair. For more information about Excel Nutraceuticals and all of its fine natural-based and organic products, do visit our website at www.xcel-n.com. Or you can also call us at our 800 number, 1-800-977-3981. Before we get into the show, I'd like to let all our listening audience know that this show is intended to bring information about new developments, new research, scientific developments on the use of natural science or natural products that you may know of in the stores, the health food stores, or we like to call it natural substances in any event, to individuals who are not aware of that. That's the intent of the show. Pardon me. Now, we want to make one thing clear here. This show is not to be used or is not intended to be used as a substitute for medical diagnosis. So if you are having some type of problem or a health problem, or a health concern, you're not feeling well, or you don't know what the problem is, or maybe you know somewhat what the problem is, we strongly advise that you visit your healthcare practitioner, and get yourself checked out. Make sure that everything's all right, and it's not really a bad situation or an extreme situation, or it could be something that could be of medical urgency. So this is not what this show is about. So that being said, I'd like to now bring in my co-host here tonight. Gary, good evening, and how are you doing?
I'm fine. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay, great.
So how you been getting along today, Gary? You ready to start up a brand new series of broadcasts?
Absolutely. I really am. Just let me get right here today in alternative medicine.
Yes.
New name, new show, moving towards a new direction, and it's just good to be back with you and also to be back speaking to the people and the public about things that go on in their everyday lives and things that they have to deal with on a daily, monthly basis concerning different ailments and medications versus natural alternatives. And just sounds like a great thing to be a part of and just ready to go. Is Monica with us tonight or we?
Monica's not with us tonight, but she'll be joining us probably on our Sunday show. That's another thing we want to let our listening audience know. We'll be doing this show twice a week. That's the intent. The show will air 8:30 on Thursdays, 8:30 p.m., and then again on Sundays at hopefully between 11 and 11:30 p.m. So that's the intent of the show, and we'll have another host on with us on Sunday. Gary, you know, one of the things about the show is, you know, we're business people, we're scientists, and, you know, we try to bring as much clarity and as much exactness to the public on various health topics, various health substances, and various drugs or diseases. As you well know, we have various backgrounds, mine being in the physical sciences, and I try to shoot straight. Though I consider myself a natural scientist now, Gary, I did come up in secular scientists, studying the physics and the biology and the inorganic chemistry and organic chemistry. And so I know the terms and I know the areas very well. And so I constantly review not only medical, secular medical, medicinal information or publications, but I also review natural medicine publications. And I wanted to go over some things briefly with our listening audience, or just to talk about a couple of things that you should know. And we'll be doing from time to time different subjects or segments in the show on various topics. And let me bring to your attention, Gary, a publication that came out about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, and it said echinacea ineffective in common cold. Now, you know, people for many, many years have sworn on echinacea and the use of echinacea to help them in colds. And this article goes on to say, despite its popularity, the herbal remedy echinacea is no better than a placebo in relieving the symptoms or shortening the duration of the common cold. It says, while echinacea has long been marketed as an immune booster that helps fight infections, a new study pointed out that the herbal treatment has no effects on the immune system. The study conducted on more than 700 adults and children showed that the duration of cold in patients taking echinacea, also known as purple coneflower, is about 7 to 10 hours less than those not taking the remedy. Now, I want to stop right here, Gary, because in first glance, it says that it's ineffective in relieving the common cold. But then the article, it's a short article, goes on to say that the people in the study did get better 7 to 10 hours by using the herb than without using the herb. So this title is somewhat a misnomer, because in the body of it, it actually says that you did get a little bit better, quicker rather, than if you took nothing at all. So I find that that in a case is somewhat misleading from a scientific point of view. Now, you know, Gary, one could argue, you know, is 7 to 10 hours less time better than the regular? I don't know. What would be your take on that? If you could take something and, I don't know, I'm just getting your take on it.
Oh, well, the thing of it is, you know, with a cold, 10 hours is 10 hours. I was just thinking about that when you were saying it. That, I'll take it. I mean, it's 10 hours earlier, I will be relieved of cold and just cold symptoms, or was it cold and flu or just cold?
Just the cold.
Just cold? Wow.
Yeah.
What do they say? Every little bit helps.
Every hour
is important. It depends. If that's the 10 hours that I was, you know, that a person needed to be at work that day, and it kicked in, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they were able to go to work that day and have one more day of work rather than one less, I think I'll try the echinacea.
I think
it's pronounced in different. Some people, enunciations are different, echinacea, but it's the same thing.
Exactly. And, you know, I agree with you. It says, you know, most people would take the same position, I think, that you're taking. It goes on to say the pharmacological activity of the substance probably only has a small beneficial effect in persons with the common cold. Well, okay, like you say, every little bit helps. But then it says, for most people, the potential to get relief a few hours sooner probably isn't worth the trouble and cost of taking the supplement. Well, you may be right again here, Gary, because if I got to go to a meeting the next morning, and if I've been, you know, it's a big meeting, and I've had this cold lingering for, what, 3 or 4 days, and the general rule is most colds will linger for 3 to 5 days. So if I can get over that cold 10 hours quicker, which is pretty much a work day, then the next day I can go into that important meeting, you know, doing what I got to do and not being all stuffy and dry and things like that. So I would think that would be a benefit. I agree with you.
Absolutely. And side effects. Did not mention that there are any side effects to it. So it doesn't seem like it's going to hurt you at all. So that's 10 extra hours. It's a benefit.
Exactly. You know, there were no side effects.
Right. So I guess in my case, coming from a sales background, it's what are the benefits and what are the objections? And it sounds like the benefits far outweigh the objections. So if it's going to give me cut the amount of time by any time, and then it's not going to give me any harsh side effect or something lingering, you're right, that is kind of a conflicting story. It sounds like it was put together by a company that was manufacturing something for colds. Maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let me pick up another release here on natural health. This is from the UC San Diego health system. This was released less than a year ago, and it says higher vitamin D intake needed to reduce cancer risk. Now, it's been a big discussion for many, many years. I would say for the last 20 years, and I'm just giving some backdrop on this now. About the use of vitamin D to prevent the onset of various cancers. And some people say, well, many researchers said, well, there's no validity to it. Others said there might be validity to it. Naturalists swore by it, says, you know, you got to take da-da-da-da. And, you know, over the years, the Food and Drug Administration and more likely the government has set certain standards for various vitamin intake levels, and you see them on the side of various food substances. You'll see the little listing. They call it the RDA regulations listings, and this is to kind of tell you what you need, you know, on a daily basis, what type of vitamin or nutrients you need on a daily basis. And for a long time, Gary, they've been saying, well, you only need, you know, 50 milligrams to 100 milligrams of vitamin D. But listen to this study that came out. And this is from the University of California research facility, which is supposed to be, Gary, it's supposed to be one of the elite R&D institutions around the nation. It says researchers at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine, and Creighton University School of Medicine, Omaha, have reported the markedly higher intake of vitamin D is needed to reach blood levels that can prevent or markedly cut the incidence of breast cancer and several other major diseases that had been originally thought. See, these findings was published in the Journal of Anti-Cancer Research. And this is what they came to conclude. They said, while these levels are higher than the traditional intakes, they are largely in a range deemed safe for daily use in a 2011 report from the National Academy of Science Institute of Medicine. Now, if you don't know, the National Academy of Science Institute of Medicine is the highest form of chivalry or flattery you can get in medicine, okay? If you can get a publication in that, or if you can get a citation in that, that means you up in the number one group, okay? So we found that daily intake of vitamin D by adults in the range of 4,000 to 8,000 IU means international units, are needed to maintain blood levels of vitamin D metabolites in the range needed to reduce by about half the risk of several diseases. Such diseases are breast cancer, colon cancer, multiple sclerosis, and type 1 diabetes. It says, this researcher said he was surprised to find that the intakes required to maintain vitamin D levels were so high, but these levels are still safe. In other words, what they're saying is that if you take 4,000 to 8,000 IUs of vitamin D a day, and I think they eventually said that, you know, a comfortable level would be 4,000 IUs. And we've discussed this in the past on other talk shows about taking about 4,000 IUs a day. That will cut your incidence of cancer by 50%. And this is a scientific fact, and this is using a natural remedy, Gary. You got any comments on that?
Yeah, I do. And then you actually kicked the thought up in my mind as far as some studies that have been done with mushrooms and onions given to women to eat and the reduction of the breast cancer also. So, yeah, natural. I believe that as time goes on, you know, people, like what you're telling me would have been a huge surprise to me 10 years ago. 5 years ago, I would have been slightly surprised. But now there's just far too much research and too much data as you were using R&D, research and development. There's just an enormous amount of data showing that using vitamins and eating your vitamins and transforming from medication to vitamins and good health, and it's always going to give you a better result than most medications will. And that is a really good information for people, to, especially women, to pay attention to about the usage and the dosage amounts of vitamin D.
Exactly. You're right. It is some good information, and I'm very happy to see the type of research going on, and even more so various scientists who are in the forefront of doing this research are being outspoken and not being afraid to say certain things, not being afraid of political people and lobbyists and pharmaceutical people, and really, you know, letting the information out so that people can be aware that there are some natural things that you can supplement your daily regime with that could help you achieve a better quality of life. And that's what this subject tonight we're going to talk about is going to be: the pros and cons of natural remedies versus drug therapies. And this has been going on now for probably 25 years. And we're going to really dwell into this and look at some of the major drugs, some of the more popular drugs over the last 10 to 15 years, and how these drugs come into prominence. And, you know, do they really work? And if they do work, what are the side effects? And you brought that up early. And you know, we've written information and publications about, you know, natural versus synthetic. And, you know, we've pretty much concluded that it's not necessarily a function of natural is better than synthetic, but it's really a case of effectiveness versus safety. I mean, is, you know, but just because it's natural doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be effective. And vice versa for the drug, just because it's synthetic doesn't mean it's going to be effective. And even more so, is it going to be safe? And we're going to dwell in it, Gary, when we come back. We're going to take a break here, and we're going to reload, and we're going to come back shortly. And we want our listening audience to stay tuned and just hold on. More to come in just one moment.
Donald San Antonio. We gave her a bath and we started rubbing her down with the XLSO, and she has had complete moisture in her skin ever since.
Excel Nutraceuticals All Natural Base SO has been scientifically developed for the management of eczema and psoriasis. For more information, go to xcel-n.com.
My name's Dr. Karen Holly, and I am the senior pastor of Lifeway Church, and I'm also a psychological therapist. My grandson, Christian Turner, and he uses SO, and he has eczema, and so it's just worked wonderfully for him.
Tried Bump Stop. I've tried all kind of stuff. My skin, you would never believe. People don't believe anymore that I used to have hair bumps except my friends. It cleared it up. No more dry patches, even the patches that would come around.
Nutraceuticals All Natural Products. Call today at 1-800-977-3981.
I actually brought it for my daughters. Their hair has gotten so much thicker. It's gotten longer. And they feel, it's like they had a bald spots on the side of their head. But ever since we've been using it, the hair
has
actually grown.
Excel Nutraceuticals All Natural Base HGS has been scientifically developed for the control of eczema of the scalp and hair regrowth. For more information, go to www.xcel-n.com.
Yes, hi. My name is Carmen. About a year ago, I had ordered 3 of the jars of the Excel HGS, and I'm here to tell you, oh, it really, really worked. It stopped my hair from thinning out. My hair is just beautiful, and I'm just so very well pleased.
Nutraceuticals All Natural Products. Call today at 1-800-977-3981.
Attention. Are you or someone you know experiencing hair loss due to thinning hair, overbraiding, or chemical treatment? Then you need XL Nutraceuticals All Natural Base HGS. Attention, do you or someone you love suffer from eczema, psoriasis, or contact dermatitis? Then you need XL Nutraceuticals All Natural Base SO. For more information, log on to www.xcel-n.com today.
Hey.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Today in Alternative Medicine, I'm your host, MD Shaheed, bringing you much information on the use of natural science for the control of many human health concerns. This show is a project of Excel Nutraceuticals. At Excel Nutraceuticals, we produce and manufacture all natural-based and organic products for the control and management of eczema, psoriasis, contact dermatitis, and thinning hair. For more information about all our fine natural-based and organic products, do visit our website at www.xcel-n.com. We're going to talk today a little bit about drugs and natural remedies. And this is a very interesting topic, as I stated before the break, and one that brings about much debate between naturalists or natural scientists and doctors or secular scientists. And one of the things that we should understand is that the pharmaceutical industry is an extremely big industry. It's hundreds of billions of dollars a year. There are many pharmaceutical companies all around the globe, in America and around the globe, and they make many, many drugs. And a lot of times people think that much research goes into these drugs, Gary, in terms of how they bring them to the market. But we're going to see that many times these drugs are rushed to the market, and then sometimes, Gary, they're fabricated and then put on the market. We're going to see all of that. And I want to bring to our audience attention now one particular drug that was really big. It's a big seller by a company named Merck. And this drug is Vioxx. And Vioxx was basically a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug that was designed and developed to treat osteoarthritis and acute pain, Gary. That's what it was developed. And then they went on to start marketing this particular drug to treat rheumatoid arthritis. Now, keep in mind, the FDA only gave Merck the door to market it as anti-inflammatory drug for certain diseases, particularly pain. But they even went further and started marketing for rheumatoid arthritis, and they made a lot of money off of this drug. And then, bam, what happens? They started about maybe 1995, 96, and then 10 years later, let me read to you or give you some information what happened. This came from a 2000 and I think it was a 5 article, and this was a court settlement. Merck pays $950 million in criminal fines for falsely marketing Vioxx. Okay? Remember, it wasn't designed to even for what they were marketing for. It was basically a painkiller. They had to pay the FDA, interesting, $950 million, not to mention the billions of dollars that they had to pay in lawsuits. And I think there were nearly 50,000 lawsuits with this drug. That's how big this drug was. And they had to pay out about $5 billion in lawsuits. Now, they made probably $50, $60 billion over the life of the drug. So the little $5 billion that they paid out was basically nothing. Probably less than 10% of their, you know, what they made, the revenue off the drug. This is what the problem with the drug was. This drug was supposed to help people with rheumatoid arthritis. Basically, that means arthritis in the joints. And you had pain in the joints and in the muscle tissue, excruciating pain, and this drug was supposed to help all this pain go away. Well, what the drug actually did is cause over 27,000 heart attacks. Many of them died. They had sudden cardiac death. And it took them 5 years. This is 5 years after the drug was approved by the FDA. This drug, first of all, was doing very little job for pain, for what it was supposed to be. it used for, and then they went and marketed it for something else that they didn't get approval, FDA approval for. How'd they do that? I don't know. But they got it done. And, you know, all these people died, and you come to find out, much of the information was already known before they started marketing the drug. Now, this is an FDA-approved drug, Gary. Now, you know, what does that say about the credibility of the FDA and this particular company, Merck?
Well, let's go back to the beginning. Pharmaceutical industry, as you were saying, is not big, it's huge. Did you mention how huge it is and the great influence they have on everybody and throughout the world, mostly our government? But anyway, that's one of probably many stories that you could probably dig up on a couple of maybe lots of pharmaceutical companies. But the thing about that is wow, FDA and them finding out and then these people passing away. And yeah, I don't know, if you dig into a story like that, you'll probably find that, you know, a lot of this stuff may have been held back until time had passed from, unfortunately, even people passing. But you know, as a scientist, the law of large numbers and how things are operated. Unfortunately, when you look at the amount of people that may have died from taking this drug, or unfortunately, when you look at the law of large numbers in a company and a pharmaceutical company and drugs, oh my God, it's kind of hard to even say, but, you know, they consider that a small amount to have to suffer for what they would consider the betterment of the masses.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's you're right. And I guess you're saying that, I mean, some people can be sacrificed for the betterment of the whole. But
I don't think they should be, but that's maybe how they look at it.
Well, and I don't necessarily agree with that either. I agree, but I'm saying maybe that's the way they looked at it. But the reality is they already knew this drug had problems before they even put it on the market. And this is what I'm coming back to in terms of effectiveness versus safety. First of all, it's not that effective. Then it has some serious safety hazards associated with it. But you go on and do it anyway because somebody done put a lot of money in the R&D and some CEO wants to get a big promotion. He wants to get a golden parachute down the road just in case something happened. So he pushes this thing through. And these are the same people that'll tell you, you know, don't use vinegar. Don't use Espen salt. These are the same people, scientific people. And I know, I'm telling you, because I work with them. I am a scientist. You know, and so this kind of situation goes on all the time, not only in pharmaceutical companies, but also in chemical companies. Then you have a big giant like Merck to produce this product, knowing the hidden dangers, make a bunch of money, you know, and then run. It's like a hit and run. It's like somebody driving down the street, hit you, and then keep on going. And they get a $950 million fine, but they probably made, what, $60, $70 billion over the life of the drug? And it's not on the market anymore. The FDA finally took it off. But, I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that goes on in the drug industry. And you're right. This happens all the time. And I'm not an advocate saying that drugs are bad, they're evil. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there has to be some accountability in the scientific community to make sure that these type of incidents don't happen. But as we get into the show, Gary, I'm going to reveal to you that much of the scientific community is wallowing in their own filth, corrupt. Let me bring you something else to your attention. You've probably seen 2, 4, 5 years ago about commercials, mostly on cable, but they made their way to regular TV channels or stations, about the use of this particular drug to help people control plaque psoriasis. And it's just supposed to be the greatest thing to come out for this particular disease. And that's another thing, Gary, when I say disease, as a scientist and now as a natural scientist, I differ strongly with the use of the term diseases, because to me, from growing up and interacting as an individual and studying the different disciplines of science, it was my understanding that a disease is something you caught. But the FDA says disease is anything that make you mess you up, any disorder you might have, it's a disease. So if you cough too much, you got a disease. You know, that's their definition of disease. I don't agree with that definition. I think it's way too broad. But that's another discussion.
But because, you know, it allows for a whole lot of other things, like the situation that you just read, which is public information. So, yeah.
Exactly.
It's broad. There's a lot of things that you can do.
Right. And on top of that, they use that. Lobbyists have used that, and political people have used that to have Congress to put pressure on the FDA, and the FDA has now promulgated various regulations that says that anything that treats a disease is a drug. So if you have a disease, of course everything is a disease. If you cough too much, you know, if you sleep too much, if you can't sleep enough, if you laugh too much, if you cry too much, you got a disease. And if you find something,
I'm sure they've got something for it.
Exactly. And if you find something
it's
a drug.
For it.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's a drug. And so
absolutely.
If you got and if you got something for it, and it works. Now, if it works, if it doesn't work, they don't mess with you. But if it works. You got a drug now, so Gary, why haven't you filed for your drug status? You're violating the law. You're selling the drug, you know, because you made people stop crying, so it must be a drug because you're treating the disease.
You made money in the process because I guess 98% of people in the world cry, so that would be a huge market to tap into.
Well, it is. Of course, there's one exception, though. Scurvy is not a disease. Vitamin C is not a drug. You can take vitamin C. That's all right. You can't. That's not a drug. You know. So you can take vitamin C. They make an exception in that regulation. Yeah. But this Humira, Gary, is used for plaque psoriasis, and you probably heard of it, right?
Oh yeah. I've you know, you've heard me say this before, that when you when you see a drug advertised on television. You know, as I say, my background is sales, Matt, you close your eyes and listen to what they're saying and not look at the pretty pictures. Because 9 times out of 10, if you listen to these commercials, and they're normally 60 seconds or more, and not look at the pretty pictures, I mean, you will hear that it may eventually clear up your plaque psoriasis. And it doesn't even say 100%. I think it went up to about 80% over 6 to 8 months. But the things that could happen to you were even much more devastating from taking these drugs, that particular, well, that, and we've heard this with other things that had come out for eczema and psoriasis before this.
Exactly. Well, what it says on their website, this particular drug, if you don't know, is marketed by Abbott Laboratories, and it says, what is the most important information I should know about Humira? And it says that some people using Humira have developed a rare, fast-growing type of lymphoma, cancer. This condition affects the liver, spleen, and bone marrow, and can be fatal. This has occurred mainly in teenagers and young adults using Humira or similar medicines to treat some other health diseases that they talk about it. It says Humira can lower blood cells to help your body fight infections. You're probably going to need to be tested often. Avoid being near people who are sick or have infections. Avoid activities that may increase your risk of bleeding injury. And it goes on and says you can even possibly catch tuberculosis. Now, this is interesting. I mean, I just got psoriasis. It's not even fatal. It's just ugly. It's not even ugly. But you give it, it's just ugly.
Plaque or it can be ugly. But
well, yeah, it can be ugly. Let me rephrase. Okay. Okay. It can be ugly. But what I'm saying is,
it's very discomforting. I mean, people that I've seen with it, they seem like they are very, very uncomfortable with people looking at it or even just having to deal with it. So it's not that we're saying anything bad about people with plaque psoriasis. It's this particular drug that, from what you were saying, it sounds as though, and I'm not a scientist, but from what you just read to me, sounds as though it does something to the immune system to weaken it.
Well, it does.
Stay away from sick people, and that's, you know, and those type of things. Sounds like that my immune system becomes weakened from using this particular drug for plaque psoriasis.
Well, it does. What it does, it shuts off the production of a factor, an immune factor that causes the body to secrete lymphocytes that help fight infection. That's what it does. It's called an immune modulator, and it's kind of like Elidel that was used for eczema some years ago, and it has been black boxed ever since. And you're right. But my point was, and I wasn't, you know, making fun of plaque psoriasis. I was trying to be serious on them. But the thing is that it is uncomfortable. It itches. It's uncomfortable. And you're right. It's not a good sight to see. But I mean, it's not fatal. But here you're giving me a drug that is fatal. They could be fatal. In other words, my plaque psoriasis may clear up, but then I'll be dead, so I can't enjoy it anyway. So
absolutely. And then again, this is something you're reading from their website. This is not something you are saying or I are saying. You and I are saying this is something that you are reading right now from their website about their product, correct?
Exactly. This is not something okay. This is information on their website. It goes on to say, it tells you Humira is a TNF blocker that can lower the ability of the immune system to fight infections, serious infections, tuberculosis, viruses, fungi, bacteria. People have died from these infections. It goes on to say cancer for children and adults taking these type of medications. And it includes some other stuff, hepatitis B, allergic reactions. It can mess with your nervous system, blood problems, even cause you to have heart failure, liver problems. You know, so this is coming from their site, okay? So I'm only giving you the side effects. Look at all these side effects associated with taking a drug just for one thing. You know, you got one problem, but now you're going to have four or five problems taking a drug.
Hey, MD, could you imagine if they did a commercial that really showed what could happen to you? And I was sitting there in my mind, seeing all these things that could happen if they really showed a true commercial, what that would look like.
Oh, man, that would look terrible. This is Today in Alternative Medicine. If you want to get in on this conversation, we're going through some things about drug therapy versus natural remedies. You can call us now if you have a comment, 347-996-5507. That's 347-996-5507. Now, look, let's go on, Gary, and let's talk about quickly. Let's go through this. I'm only dealing with drugs that deal with major problems, you know, help from. There are obviously minor situations, but that's one of the bigger situations in America now because of obesity, because of bad nutrition, is high blood pressure. And, high blood pressure, yes, a lot of people got high blood pressure. Now, look, most of the medications, this particular printout basically says, and I agree with this, is that almost any medication may have some side effects, even minor. It may even be a stomach ache. Everybody won't experience it, but some people will. But in the case of high blood pressure medications, with the exception of a few, they don't really have really, really bad side effects. But let's just go through some quickly right here. Diuretics. Diuretics is used to basically help you pass urine. Generally, people with high blood pressure or have problems or excreting enough sodium from the kidney, and these diuretics basically is changing the osmotic pressure, in that area and causing you to, you know, pass more water, thereby relieving what, more salt, sodium. And basically, you could get, you know, weaknesses, leg cramps, fatigue. Pretty much that's about it with those type of drugs. Beta blockers. Beta blockers make your heart less beat less forcefully and more slowly. Some people take beta blockers. You could have asthma symptoms. Your hands and feet could get cold. Maybe some depression, erection problems, insomnia, and sleep problems. That's with beta blockers. So sometimes, you know, I'm sure your health physician will monitor you. Particularly when you're taking this type of drug for hypertension. ACE inhibitors. ACE inhibitors.
You went through that one real fast.
You want me to go?
You just went, well, you went through that real fast.
That's I didn't want to talk about
major,
erection problem.
It's a major problem.
Well, that's amazing. You know what? And I'm going to talk about another drug when we – but you're right. The you could have some erection problems. But, you know, with these particular drugs, that particular class of drugs. Of course, they got another drug to help that problem, Viagra.
Right.
So, you know,
so
you can have...
the beat goes on.
And the beat goes on, yes.
We'll you buy this, and then we'll sell you this, and then we'll just continue to have a drug for everything, as you were saying earlier.
Exactly. ACE inhibitors. ACE inhibitors, these are medications that block the formation of a hormone. It causes blood flows, blood vessels, pardon me, to narrow. Obviously, I guess in this situation, there's a hormone that's produced in people that causes the blood vessel to get narrow, and so that the passage through the blood vessel is small. And since the flow doesn't change, the blood flow doesn't change, that automatically will cause an increase in pressure, and since you'll get a high blood pressure reading. You could get dry hacking cough that doesn't go away, skin rash or loss of taste, or some possible side effects. Not too bad. And then you have receptor blockers. These are high blood pressure medications that shield blood vessels from a hormone that causes blood vessels to narrow. And I'm just going through this because some of the listening audience may be on some of these drugs, but you may be experiencing certain problems with these type of medications, and this is the reason why. Calcium channel blockers, constipation, dizziness, headache, irregular or rapid heartbeat, swollen ankles, and I know some people on calcium channel blockers, and they do complain of the swelling of the ankles. Yeah, you probably know some people as well.
I see that more than, yeah. That seems to be more common, as a matter of fact. My sister's going through it right now. Some new medication they put on, she said. And they said that it could cause swelling in the hands and feet. And
yeah.
That is exactly what happened within a couple of days.
Exactly. Then they have
and it's
alpha,
painful,
alpha.
Though.
It is painful. Well, you know, they don't tell you about the pain now.
Oh, they just tell you that there's a possibility.
It's just, yeah,
they
don't
say none of it is certain. They always say it's possible.
Right, right. And then you have alpha blockers, which basically reduce nerve impulses to blood vessels, allowing blood to flow easily. You could get a fast heart rate and some dizziness, lightheadedness, or weakness when you're standing up suddenly or getting up in the morning. So these are some of the hypertension-type drugs that are on the market. And you can see in general, these drugs don't cause as a severe problem as some of the other drugs. Although, you know, headache, dizziness, swelling, you know, ankles are swollen, your hand, that could be annoying, that could be uncomfortable. And, you know, those are still some things that a lot of times in the research, it doesn't really come out as profound. And you basically just have to go through a bunch of clinical studies to get this kind of results over time. This kind of data comes in over time. Yeah. I want to mention something here, Gary, before we leave this particular subject on drug therapy. We've talked about different drugs that can be used and also drugs that have some problems. There's one particular drug for hair that recently came out, some information just came out about a week ago, Propecia. Propecia was touted as being a very safe drug for hair growth in men, particularly men under 40 years of age. There's a lot of men now complaining they've been on the drug for 3-4 years and they have erection problems. And in fact, it was so bad the doctor had to get up, take them off of the drug. But guess what? The problem didn't go away when they took them off the drug. In fact, their the genital area, it shrank to like a kitty size situation, and it won't recover. And these guys.
What's the name of this drug? So I know to stay away from it. What are you talking about?
Propecia.
Yeah. Propecia. Okay.
Hello.
Does it have like any Rogaine or something in it?
No, it's different than Rogaine. And, you know, Rogaine was supposed to have been a problem in some extent. So they came out with Propecia. But now we find Propecia has its own problems, too. So, you know, I just want you to stay tuned because you're going to hear a lot about that in the news on Propecia and how it's really beginning to mess up a lot of young men's sexual lifestyle, you know, the activity. And
that's important, man. I mean, no, because you're talking about something. I mean, it sounds as though this study is stating that it can cause some irreversible side effects.
Exactly. It is
in your sex or life or something. That's serious. Well,
that
I mean, it's all serious, but that's shocking to hear. That I don't think when we talked about Rogaine before that it had a reversing effect in the
no, it didn't
erectional and sexual area.
Exactly. I mean, once you got off of Rogaine, had some other issues. It did have some libido issues. But it didn't have actually genital issues like Propecia. We're going to go to a quick break, Gary, and we're going to get right back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the pharmaceutical company and how they actually push these drugs through. Stay tuned. We'll be back just in one moment.
I actually brought it for my daughters. Their hair has gotten so much thicker. It's gotten longer. And they feel it's like they had a bald spots on the side. Head, but ever since we've been using it, the hair has actually grown.
Excel Nutraceuticals all natural base HGS has been scientifically developed for the control of eczema of the scalp and hair regrowth. For more information, go to www.xcel-n.com.
Yes, hi. My name is Carmen. About a year ago, I had ordered 3 of the jars of the Excel HGS, and I'm here to tell you, oh, it really, really worked. It stopped my hair from thinning out. My hair is just beautiful, and I'm just so very well pleased.
Nutraceuticals, all natural products, call today at 1-800-977-3981.
Attention, are you or someone you know experiencing hair loss due to thinning hair, overbraiding, or chemical treatment? Then you need Excel Nutraceuticals All Natural Base HGS. Attention, do you or someone you love suffer from eczema, psoriasis, or contact dermatitis? Then you need Excel Nutraceuticals All Natural Base SO. For more information, log on to www.xcel-n.com today.
Welcome back to the show today in Alternative Medicine. This is MD Shaheed with XL Nutraceuticals. XL Nutraceuticals produces all natural, base, and organic products for the control and management of eczema, psoriasis, contact dermatitis, and thinning hair. For more information about our company and all its fine natural base and organic products, do visit our website at www.xcel-n.com. Gary, I want to quickly go into something. I want to read something. We don't want to spend too many much time on this, but because we want to get to the natural aspect of it. We've talked about the pros and the cons of drugs. I mean, you know, some of these drugs do work, and we'll talk about some drugs, mainly OTCs, over-the-counter drugs, that really do have some effectiveness, and I recommend if people can't find an alternative, a natural alternative, they should continue to use the OTC. But this is going to shed a little light on how some of these drugs come about. You may ask, well, these drugs so bad, how do they come about? How does the FDA approve this if they don't really do the research? Well, this came out in 2005. It says medical papers by ghostwriters push therapy. And they're only talking about one type of therapy. This is hormone therapy for women, Gary. But this occurs all the time in pharmaceutical companies. It says newly unveiled court documents show that ghostwriters paid by a pharmaceutical company played a major role in producing 26 scientific papers backing the use of hormone replacement therapy in women, suggesting that the level of hidden industry influence on medical literature is broader than previously known. And this paper goes on to say that this particular company, YF, which was producing this drug, made billions of dollars between 1998 and 2005. It said, but the seeming consensus fell apart in 2002 when a huge federal study on hormone therapy was stopped after researchers found that menopausal women who took certain hormones had an increased risk of invasive breast cancer, heart disease, and stroke. A later study found that hormones increased the risk of dementia in older patients. Now, what this is saying is that these studies that they're saying on TV, these 75%, they're not really studies at all. They pay somebody outside the company who has good skills in writing to just make up stuff. And then when they make it up, then they go to a university or they go to a medical doctor and tell him, I'll pay you $5,000, I'll pay you $25,000, let us put your name on it to make it credible. And then they send it to the FDA like, hey, we got this great study for Propecia. I'm not saying this is what happened to Propecia. I'm just using it as an analogy. But what I'm saying is this is what happened with this particular drug, and many women died and got sick behind this drug. It says the documents on ghostwriting were uncovered by lawyers suing Wyeth and were made public after requests in court from PLOS Medicine, a medical journal from the Public Library of Science in New York Times. So this only came out because of a lawsuit. They got sued. It says the court documents provided a detailed paper trail showing how Wyeth contracted with a medical communications company to outline articles, draft them, and then solicit top physicians to sign their names, even though many of the doctors contributed little or no writing. The documents suggest the practice went well beyond the case of Wyeth and hormone therapy involving numerous drugs from other pharmaceutical companies. This is how they're pushing their drug. They're no better than the natural guy that says, well, you know, my mom told me if you use this or that, this will help you in your remedies. They tell you yours is anecdotal or it's not scientific. There's not scientific. It's just a fabrication. It's made up. Let me go on and read this to you right quick. It says widespread ghostwriting of drug trials means scientific credibility of pharmaceutical industry is a sham. They do this all the time. Okay, it says this is how they do it. I'm going to give you the steps how they do it. Number one, a drug company runs an in-house study using fraudulent study designs from the start to prove that their drug is both safe and effective. If the study produces negative results, the results are thrown out. If it produces positive results, they proceed to step two. Step two. That same drug company uses in-house writers, ghost writers, to write up the results of the study in a favorable light by discarding any data that doesn't fit the desired outcome. Note that these in-house writers are marketing experts, people not doctors of science or doctors or scientists. They are just basically on the payroll to write stories. Step three, the drug company contracts a noted doctor or academic professor or others to pay them a bribe, a writing fee, to put their name on the paper as if they were the original author. In reality, the paper has already been written. They just putting their name on it. All they got to do is write their name on it. Step four, the paper is submitted to peer-reviewed academic journals such as JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, for publication. Since the paper appears to have been independently written by an outside scientist or doctor, the journal is likely to consider it credible and for publication. The drug company reveals nothing about the true origins of the paper. Step five, the drug company that sponsored all of this then published the study, sends it to the FDA, claiming this is a new scientific fact that proves their drug is both safe and effective. Since the study was published in a peer-reviewed medical journal, it must be true. Step six, the FDA, which conducts no study of their own, automatically believes the conclusion of the study and therefore approves the drug as safe and for sale. Now, this is how they do it. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is interesting. It's wow. And you were making me think about some things I'd seen on like 60 Minutes in 2020, how they have gone and gotten companies to in different countries to approve things that had already been banned, you know. So, that's really interesting. It's almost like, to say we'll stop at nothing to make a profit.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, one time you were explaining on another show about how that kind of works. And I wish we had a moment where you could go back into explaining that, having worked in that industry, I mean, well, as a scientist, one time you were talking about how there was nothing new under the sun, as the statement would go, that a lot of these drugs that are new are just some of the same stuff formulated in a different way.
Well, yeah, let me just quickly say that many of the drugs that you have are drugs that were synthesized or developed for some earlier medical ailment, maybe 30 years ago. And once, you know, I guess it runs its course, its lifetime, its business cycle. They don't just get rid of it. They keep it on the shelf. And, you know, you may have many drugs like that on the shelf, and 25 years later, somebody goes and says, you know what, let's test this for such and such medical condition. And so basically it's like a round robin thing. You know, you just keep recycling it, and they just give it a new name, a different name, or whatever, and they can file for a new a drug status because it's to treat a whole different medical condition. So that's allowable, even though the drug was approved for something else maybe 30 years ago. I'll give you a quick case in point. The drug for supposedly to help people with AIDS, infected with HIV, was originally an anti-cancer drug in the 60s, early 60s, but it proved to be so detrimental to people's health. You know, instead of curing the cancer or stopping the cancer from developing, it wound up killing the patient. 25 years, then they started using it for people who were infected with HIV, supposedly because somebody in the laboratory saw that it halted or slowed down or prevented HIV replication in a test tube. Of course, as we all know the story, it wound up killing a bunch of people who had HIV but not full-blown AIDS, so they died anyway, not from the AIDS but from the drug. So, again, a lot of this is just a reevaluation of earlier drugs and the use in the different areas, health areas. And pharmaceutical companies do that all the time. I wanted to bring that issue to how these drugs come about, Gary, and I hope the listening audience has got a better understanding of how these drugs come about. And I'm not saying all drugs are not good. I mean, there's some OTC drugs. I think they work fairly well. They have minimum side effects. Prilosec and I think it was Nexium for heart problems. I mean, not heart problems, acid reflux and heartburn. I mean, a lot of people have heartburn and they think they have acid reflux problem, but they really don't. But in any event, these two drugs seem to work fairly well. They're called proton blockers, and they prevent the accumulation of formation of acid. They have some side effects that are minimum, and they're not that widespread. Now, some people will say, well, you know, you don't need to take that. You could take apple cider vinegar. Apple cider vinegar. But I haven't seen enough studies suggest that apple cider vinegar is that effective for acid reflux. I know some people, you know, claim it is, but again, a lot of these people have heartburn. They have severe heartburn. They don't have acid reflux. They say, "Oh, I burped and I get this burning in my chest." That's not acid reflux. They get this severe burn in their chest. Acid reflux, ladies and gentlemen, take it from somebody who knows, is when you're asleep at night and you wake up choking on acid. That's acid reflux. You wake up and acid has come up through the esophagus because there's a little platelet or cap on the esophagus that's supposed to shut tight and won't allow acid to come back up when you're burping, but either through age or some other problems, it thins out and doesn't close tight, and acid can leak back up. And when it comes back up, it comes up in your throat, it comes up in your nostrils, you can almost feel it in your ears, and it burns. That's acid reflux. But that's another subject, topic of discussion. There is some people that say that maybe aloe vera juice is effective for that, and that's something that we're also investigating. We're going to go to another break, and we're going to come back and talk about natural science and how it could be used to deal with some medical remedies. So just stay tuned. Hold on for one moment.
Excel Nutraceuticals all-natural-based HGS has been scientifically developed for the control of eczema of the scalp and hair regrowth. For more information, go to www.xcel-n.com. That's www.xcel-n.com. Excel Nutraceuticals all-natural-based SO has been scientifically developed for the management of eczema and psoriasis. For more information, go to www.xcel-n.com. That's www.xcel-n.com.
Okay, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, MD Shaheed. We've been discussing drugs, drug therapy, and how drugs come into play. My co-host, Gary, has been here. We've been talking about a very interesting subject, and we want to talk a little bit more about the natural side, and so that you can get a better feel, a better way. And so the show won't seem so slanted, even though we are people heavily involved in natural science. Excel Nutraceuticals. For more information about our company, do visit our website, www.xcel-n.com. Gary, we want to touch a little bit now on natural substances, and I want to read something to you quickly. This is a definition from the National Product Association, which we are listed on their website. We're not an active member, but we are listed on their website. And it's a definition of what natural is. This is a natural substance allows only those ingredients that come or made from renewable resources found in nature with absolutely no petroleum compounds. And, you know, I've talked to them before on this subject. I don't agree with them because, in my opinion, everything's natural. Everything's natural. Even the products that they use come from some petroleum substance. I mean, some of the preservatives, some of the stabilizers, some of the emulsifiers, it comes from petroleum substance. I mean, they take it. They take the basic molecule and then, you know, they synthesize it and then they make the emulsifier, they make the preservative. But how is that natural? This is where we make some exceptions. Oh, you make some exceptions to fit your thing. You're doing the same thing that the pharmaceutical companies did. You got something you want to make money off of, so you're going to make it natural even though it's not natural. It's all come from petroleum. And I mean, that's just my swing on that. But in natural remedies, Gary, the term that we've come up with in our company, we know natural substance is a very loose term, but we like to define a natural substance as any substance whose basic structure found in nature and observed activity or reactivity has not been adulterated by chemical or processed means. In other words, if I go get an orange, and I want to get the vitamin C out of that orange, and I extract the vitamin C out of that orange, and I dry it all out, all the fluids, and it becomes crystalline. I had a process to get the vitamin C, but if I evaluate the vitamin C and it has not lost its reactivity or activity, then it's still natural. Okay? That, to me, is a more concise and precise definition of natural. As long as whatever you do does not change the fundamental basic structure, the basic activity, and reactivity. Activity means, is it soluble? Is it not soluble? Does it burn? Does it not burn? Reactivity means, would it interact with other substances? If it interacts the same way as if you just took it right out of the orange as opposed to in the laboratory, it's the same thing. You know, that's what, to me, natural is. But a lot of natural substances, Gary, a lot of natural remedies are really not completely well defined. We hear people talk all proud about this a cure for acid reflux. What do you mean a cure? A cure means if you have something and I take, you have a medical situation, pardon me, and I take a natural substance, then that substance, that problem that I have should be gone. Why I got to keep taking it every day? Why I got to keep drinking, you know, apple cider vinegar every day? I thought you told I was cured. Once you get a cold or something, or your body, the immune system interacts and gets rid of the cold or the flu and eradicates it from your system, you don't have to keep drinking lemon tea or a little whiskey on the side. It's gone. So this term cured by natural scientists, natural proponents, needs to be looked at very carefully. And I think that's what the problem is. Because just because something is natural don't mean it's a cure. And just because it's natural doesn't necessarily mean it's effective. Again, I'll give you an example. There was a substance called strychnine many, many years ago that was used in the medical community to control irregular heartbeats. Okay? It was taken from, it's found in a tree in Southeast Asia. Regular heartbeats. But when administering the substance, it killed more of the patients than it helped. So you have to worry about irregular heartbeat anymore. He was dead. Right. So they stopped. Yeah, they stopped using it.
Yeah, that was way back in the day. There, strychnine.
Yeah. You know, everything is natural. It's not all, okay, for example, okay, I mean, there's certain oils that are found natural, right? You can get from certain plants, from poison ivy. But who's going to put, in other words, you're not going to put the oil on poison ivory, the oil from the poison ivory on your skin, even though the oil from the poison ivory has a natural effect of killing various bacteria and pathogens. See, these plants, over many years of adaptation, evolved a system of protecting themselves. And so some of these oils, oh man, it killed the bacteria quick, but you put it on you, it'll break you out.
Right.
So, yeah, you see what I'm saying? So the thing is, we have to look at whether or not the natural substance is really going to be effective, and even more so, is it going to be safe? And herein is why I differ with some of the naturalists, because they think just everything natural, you know, go to India and get all these different herbs, and they have all these names, Gary, that you can't even pronounce. And no one has done any safety study on any of these materials. And just because some guy walking around, and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be specific, but some guy's walking around in a dashiki or a robe, singing some songs or humming some verses or whatever, tells you, you take this plant, take this plant, take this plant, and you then drink the fluid from here and drink the fluid from there. That doesn't necessarily mean that guy knows what he's talking about. Obviously, yeah, he is going on his cultural history, but everything over there and over here as well is not necessarily have been identified for effectiveness and safety. I mean, there's charlatans everywhere. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies obviously are charlatans, and there's charlatans over in India and over in China.
And I would like to make take a moment to say, send all complaints and comments to MD Shark. No, I'm just kidding. This time I didn't do it. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but you know, I was kind of thinking about, like you were saying, with some things like the eucalyptus tree and how the koala bears adapted to be able to eat that, but if I ate it, it would harm me greatly.
Exactly.
Well, this is a natural plant.
It's a natural plant, yeah, exactly.
I understand what you're saying is that there are people who make a living by making natural, because natural and organic, and I mean, it's a very needed thing. It's become very, very well known, widespread. Even a lot of medical doctors now are seeing that in some cases, natural far outweighs. And maybe one day we'll be able to talk about things like what we eat and what has been put in food to make it, to preserve it, that really hurts our bodies too and lead us to have to use these type things in the first place. But it is becoming more complex. I mean, the natural world used to be simple things, but now the compounds and different complex things have derived from places and people that, as you say, are probably more into profit than the profit of people's bodies.
And I'm not saying that natural is. Look, I'm a proponent of natural. I mean, my mom taught me a lot about natural things around the use of different salts and vinegar and things of nature. And I've fed off of this as I've developed, and I've incorporated this in my R&D career. And I'm very interested in the development of new natural substances to possibly help people manage, you know, certain elements, health elements, without the use of dangerous drugs, or at least they could cut back on the use of the drug and they can augment their regime. But again, I'm a scientist first. Just because you tell me that you got something, now you heard, you know, that this is good for this, or you read somewhere, you know, I want to know where the data, and if it's good enough, then, you know, as some of these groups, like I mentioned, the MP, the National Product Association, you know, put your resources together. Hey, let's get some R&D work done. Let's see how this stuff really works. I'm not saying do like the pharmaceutical scientists do. They find something natural. They says, oh, Gary, this works. But then the CEO says, well, yeah, but we can't sell it like this because we can't make any money. Once everybody find out that you can eat blueberries, why they need us, you know? Well, okay, well, extract the – find out the part that works, okay? And they generally don't get it all, trust me. They only get the bigger compound. But a lot of times, Gary, there's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 compounds that are smaller in activity, but the combination of the total makes it greater for all of them, you see? They call it synergism. Okay, so they're not interested in the synergies. They just want to find that one compound, what they're trying to do with green tea extract. Now, they're trying to take that one catechin and separate that so they can try to make it into a drug, because that way they can change the structure a little bit, like Dr. Frankenstein made the Frankenstein monster. They're going to go in, well, you should have a leg from a man 6'5", Tom, but we're going to put one on here from a man 5'8". He got one arm a little bit shorter than the other one, you know, one eye a little bit bigger than the other one, and you wind up with this creature, you know, that's wreaking havoc among everybody. That's how these drugs are. So the natural scientist wants to take the compounds. He studies the compound, and I never say cure. You know, to me, in order to really know cure, if you say you got a compound as a cure, somebody have to take your compound, Gary, or your substance, and live the whole rest of their life and never have that problem again, as long as whatever was afflicting them is not consumed or injected in their in the organism, okay? So if you cure somebody for something, as long as they don't come in contact with that infection anymore, then they shouldn't have that problem. So if I got acid reflux and you tell me this going to cure it, and then I go eat some jalapeno peppers and it comes back, you haven't cured me. What you've done is manage my system. And that's all right. That's cool. You know, because if you can manage it, it's better than living with it, have a bunch of sleepless nights. So this is the thing with a lot of natural drugs or natural substances that people claim and have no scientific proof. And I'm encouraging the natural scientists to come up with some proof. There are some things, quickly, Gary, that are that do we do now know that are effective remedies for various concerns. Like we talked about, we know now that green tea extract, when you take green tea extract, we know now that it can prevent the onset. It's showing promise in preventing the onset of many cancers, many different cancers. That's the standardized green tea extract, making sure you don't have just the polyphenols, but you have the catechins. We now know that sour pimento berry extract, in spite of some of the stuff in the literature, is actually effective to control benign prosthetic hyperplasia in men. We know that work if you have the right concentration and the right purity, and that's what a lot of these studies that you saw on TV did not show or did not have in their studies. And then finally,
what is that in layman's term in men, the hyperplasia?
It's enlarged prostate. It's enlarged prostate.
Enlarged prostate, okay.
Yeah, benign prosthetic hyperplasia, BPA. But let me finish because we're running out of time here. And one more thing I want to talk about is that the secular scientific community has openly admitted now that cranberry extract will not only relieve an individual urinary tract infections, but it also appears to prevent the reoccurrence and the transfer of urinary tract infections as well. So they've come out and found it. So you know what? Cranberry does work. Now watch. They're going to put it up there with vitamin C. Pretty soon they're going to say, well, everything's a drug except vitamin C and cranberry extract. You know, because everything is a drug. Because, you know, that's how they do that. See, everything is a drug. But so that's where the natural scientists have to come in. We have to look more at, you know, trying to make sure that whatever we're doing or whatever we're using actually really works, and we're not just shooting and miss like in the dark. We never said that our eczema product is a cure for eczema, even though we put it in remission. There are many people that use the eczema product, as you well know. We have hundreds of videos and written statements about people saying, hey, you know what, I had eczema, my child had eczema, I used your product for so many months, I haven't had a flare-up in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. But it's not a cure because we know sooner or later what? They tend to what? Come back and say, I had a little flare-up, right? Because it's not a cure. Because eczema, and just like psoriasis, is a genetic immune dysfunction. There's something in the immune system that's not allowing the immune response to shut down when it's supposed to shut down. And this over activity, this high activity, causes eventually, not only does it cure infection, detoxify toxins, metals, or whatever, but it also winds up destroying precious tissue, and this leads to cracks in the what? Underlying epidermal layer in the skin, which then results in what? Loss of moisture, and hence you get the dryness and hence the itching. And of course, the more you scratch it, the more damage you do, so it's a vicious cycle. So the XL nutraceutical product SO really helps that. Gary, we got a few minutes. Give me 30 seconds. We got to get off the air. Give me 30 seconds to cover this up. This is a big subject. We probably should have gave it a couple of more hours. Give me 30 seconds so we can get out of here.
Okay. Well, one, this has really been interesting. We've kind of covered a lot of bases. One, you made me think about the guy that's having problems. Had taken that and then his hair grows, but doesn't he have nice hair, but he can't do anything. Green tea extract has also been known to help promote weight loss. It's very interesting to hear about the pharmaceutical industries and the things that are constantly going on in there. And now the natural industry is starting to, I guess you could say fudge a little bit, but I still, I'm a great proponent of natural remedies and natural things, using things naturally to help promote good health.
Yes, right, Gary, you made a good point. We did talk about a lot of interesting things tonight. If you didn't get a chance, if you tuned in late, you can go back and catch it on the archives. We talked all about the drug industry and how drugs are pushed through the FDA, how they fabricate data, how doctors are paid off with bribes. This is not something we're making up. This came out in various publications about 5 or 6 years ago, and the public generally was not made aware of it. In any event, we've made you aware of it tonight on the show. We also talked about some of the natural products, some of the natural substances that you can use for various different health ailments. We want you to, listen to the show, the archives. You can learn a lot more about what we talked about. Today in Alternative Medicine is a project of XL Nutraceuticals. At XL Nutraceuticals, we produce and manufacture all natural-based products for the control and management of eczema, psoriasis, contact dermatitis, and thinning hair. For more information about XL Nutraceuticals and all our fine natural-based and organic products, do visit our website at www.xcel-n.com. Okay, that's going to do it again for the show today. We're glad you tuned in. We're also going to have a new show coming up this Sunday. You can tune in at 11 o'clock. We'll be talking about diabetes and some natural remedies to control and manage diabetes. I think it'll be interesting. You'll see there's some interesting substances out there that actually have been shown medicinally to work good on insulin insensitivity. I'd like to let you know now that all the music and songs and sounds you hear on this program is the sole possession of 2R2G Entertainment. None of these songs or sounds can be re-recorded or redistributed without their sole permission. If you're an upcoming rapper or musician, a singer, and you need some fresh beats, then send us an email at info@xcel-n.com, and we'll get that information to them as quick as possible. Okay, this is your host, MD Shaheed, wishing you a nice evening, and do take care.